The next question is from Lainey Welch.
Actually, I'm using my private name of Elaine O'Brien, not my radio moniker. Similar to what the previous woman just mentioned, this week, your Republican colleagues in the Senate voted to advance Trump health care with no hearings, no information to the public, despite the overwhelming lack of support by the American people. They also voted to roll back the Dodd-Frank Amendment aimed at preventing banks and Wall Street from the types of antics that put our country into a financial crisis in 2008. Again, no hearings, no information to the public. Thirdly, the Trump administration and the Republicans voted to advance making supermarkets pay for food stamp users. My question to you, do you approve of setting policy with no hearings, no information to the public? Secondly, do you support these three policies, the health care, Dodd-Frank, making supermarkets pay for food stamp users? Thank you for being here.
Sure, Lainey. On your first issue, I'm not sure what you're talking about. There was nothing that was moving in the Senate. You know, the House passed the health care reform bill about a month and a half ago, and what the Senate said is, hey, we're going to look and take up our own bill. Right? We might use elements of that. So when you said something moved through the Senate and we supported it, there wasn't anything to move through the Senate this past week. We're working on some issues, as I talked about in my last question, but there was nothing that moved or was voted on or moved forward on that issue. On the Wall Street Dodd-Frank issue, I'm going to be very interested in reading about it. In getting briefed on it. I saw the paper, what happened. I don't know if you're correct in saying there was no hearings on it. There's been a lot of hearings on the regulations with regard to Dodd-Frank. Look, the financial crisis in the 2009, which tanked the entire economy, had a lot of different causes. But one of my concerns has been, you know, that's been almost 10 years ago, and we still can't grow the economy. What's the problem with that? Why can't we? With regard to the Dodd-Frank regulations, we've had almost zero startups of new banks. A lot of people view those regulations as not hurting the big banks in Wall Street. In many ways, those guys love them. The huge mountain of regulations from Dodd-Frank are crushing the small community bankers, like the small community bankers in Alaska, who are the ones who lend money to our small businesses. Those are the ones being hurt. There's been essentially, since Dodd-Frank passed, almost zero small community banks started anywhere in America. That's not good for the country. So is that because the regulations are so big that they create a barrier to entry for small financial institutions to either enter the market or to just operate in the market? I think it does. So I've had a lot of concerns about those regulations and what they've done through the broader economy to financial banks. I talked to the bankers in Alaska who aren't the big Wall Street guys. There are bankers, and they're being crushed by these regs. So I'm going to take a hard look at the bill. And then on the third one, I honestly, and this is, we can get back on it, I truly am not trying to dodge it. I just don't know what you're talking about. I had not even heard about that bill. I know it didn't pass the Senate, the bill on the supermarkets and stamps. So we can look at that and get back to you. So that's my view on those three issues. But thank you.
Senator, the next question is from Gina Fissero.
As the daughter of a retired Marine who served in World War II in both Guadalcanal and Iwo Jima, as well as Korea and Vietnam, may I take this opportunity to thank you for your service.
Thank you. That's yours. Who's
my father. Your?
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing history.
I have come here today to ask on behalf of the 10,000 people who depend on the Bristol Bay Sockeye Run for you to please represent us, your constituents, in this manner. The residents of the great state of Alaska have made it clear across party lines that we do not want to put the salmon habitat at risk. After the failure of Mount Holly Mine, it is obvious that there is no viable way to protect our watershed from the pollution caused by mining. We ask that you make us a priority and stand against mining in any area that threatens the ecology of salmon habitat. Thank you for your time and consideration in this most important manner.
Here, here.
Gina, first again, thank you for the thank you and your dad and the family. I'll put that in two ways. On the southeast transboundary issue, hopefully you guys have seen it, and it relates to Mount Holly and some of the other. I've been very active on this, very active. So I raised this with everybody in the Canadian government, the highest levels, including the Prime Minister of Canada, with regard to weed eating. And I said, look, I'm a senator who believes in responsible resource development, but it's a very legitimate ask for Alaskans to have a sense of more transparency and a little bit of influence on what's going on the other side of the border with the Canadian mines. I've raised that the ambassador numerous times, with the prime minister, with their minister of natural resources, the minister of environment, every Canadian. As a matter of fact, Lieutenant Governor Malott and I are looking at doing a joint trip, trying to schedule it to Canada to kind of show Democrat, Republican, federal, state, going to Canada and say this is a big priority. So I think I've been working on that a lot. That's tourism, that's for fisheries, but that's, I keep saying this is a very reasonable request. You may have seen me last year requested that Secretary Kerry, the Secretary of State, get more involved with this, and we kind of got a brush off from him. So we didn't take this on, and I know Senator Murkowski has been working it as well. On the issue of Pebble, my view really hasn't changed since I was Attorney General and DNR Commissioner, which was I had a lot of concerns about the preemptive veto process from the EPA in terms of what they said they had authority to do. I don't think they had the legal authority to preemptively look at a project on state land, whether it's a mine or a dock in Kodiak or economic project in Anchorage, and say they were going to preemptively say no. And I think, again, a lot of people share that concern. But what I've also said is that if that mine ever goes through permitting, which is not in permitting at all, it has state, federal permitting, it has to meet the highest standards, and we shouldn't trade one resource for another. We already know we have great resources, you mentioned, in Bristol Bay. So, we called in, Senator Murkowski and I, that there was going to be a settlement that the Obama administration had been working on, and then the Trump administration took over with regard to the EPA Pebble lawsuit. We weren't involved. I wasn't going to get involved in that. That's not my role to try to get involved in, litigation. But we did reach out to the head of the EPA and let them know our views, and we had a leadership group from Bristol Bay with a lot of different stakeholders had put together a very detailed binder and letter for the EPA administrator with a bunch of documents and a formal letter to him, and they wanted us to deliver it to him. So we called him. We had a conference call, Senator Murkowski, made sure he got the letter from them, made sure he saw the documents, and we both said, look, this is the view of most Alaskans. The permitting process should be fair, high standards, They know they have to meet those, but we shouldn't trade one resource for another. And, you know, we delivered that message just a couple weeks ago to the head of the EPA. On that issue. Thank you.
Senator, the next question is from Damon Karras.
I'd like to thank you also for having this meeting. I wish that the other two representatives would do the same thing.
Well, we're having them all over, Damon. As you can see, they're a lot of fun, right? That's a joke. There.
They're about to get more fun. I'd like to read two brief statements and then ask you to respond. This is from Paul Craig Roberts. When I investigated and wrote about the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty, which is the 50-year anniversary 2 days ago, I interviewed many of the surviving crew members and Captain Ward Boston. Captain Boston told me that he and Rear Admiral Kidd were ordered by Admiral McCain, the father of the U.S. Senator, to cover up the Israeli attack. He said the entire U.S. Navy and everyone in the U.S. government knew it was a cover-up. And from Dean Russ, Secretary of State, at the time of the incident, I was never satisfied with the Israeli explanation. Their sustained attack to disable and sink precluded an assault by accident or some trigger-happy local commander. Through diplomatic channels, we refused to accept their explanations. I didn't believe them then. I don't believe them to this day. The attack was outrageous. End of quote. Survivors and crew members, including one Kodiak, say a proper congressional investigation was never done. Will you honor the brother veterans by opening up a new investigation into these attacks, actions, by the design of the state on the 50th anniversary of their outrageous attack?
Well, look, Dana, I appreciate the question, and I've read about the USS Liberty incident. I don't know a lot of the details. I know in some ways it's controversial, and I'm also a very, very strong supporter of Israel in terms of probably one of our most important allies in the world. Certainly our most important ally in the Middle East. And, what I can commit to is going back, and I got my team here, to Washington. One of the things that we do a lot, we do it for constituents, when they have questions about important issues, where I just say, look, I'm not going to come up here and try and tap things. I read about it, but I don't know a lot about it. Because we can look at we have a great resource. I do, and it's yours, right? I represent all of you, the Congressional Research Service. I can have them look at it, get the most, latest information on it, see if that satisfies you, and we'll do that. But I don't know if I would commit right here or call a hearing on an issue that I'm not 100% knowledgeable about, particularly with a country and an ally that I think we need to deepen our relationship with them. I think the last administration spent way too much time wooing Iran, the biggest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, that spent a lot of time killing U.S. Marines and soldiers in the Middle East with their very effective improvised explosive devices when we weren't trying to reestablish and strengthen our relationship with Israel and some of our traditional allies in the Middle East. And I am someone who has been very vocal about trying to reverse that trend. I didn't agree with President Obama's nuclear deal, which gives Iran a legal path to a nuclear weapon in the next 8 years. I find that madness. And so I'm not sure I want to commit to something on that. I will commit to give you as much information as the biggest, smartest library on planet Earth has on the issue. But I've been someone who's very focused on trying to reorient our Middle East policy so it's not so focused on appeasing Iran and going back to supporting our traditional allies like Israel.
Next question, Senator, is from Ryan Horwath.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I was just curious on where you stand for science-based policy when it comes to Magnuson Stevens, and hopefully you're going to go forward with that and not roll back some of the science-based parts of that act. And also, I'd like to ask you to support full funding for stock assessments in the observer program. And I'd also like to mention that we've lost a lot of our funding for Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska survey vessels due to the lack of funds.
Well, Ryan, I can say I'm 110% supportive of the science-based approach to managing our fisheries under the NSA and throughout the country. You know, since I came into the Senate, I don't sit on the Appropriations Committee, Senator Murkowski does, but the senators who are in the Appropriations Committee, we have opportunities to write letters to the top officials on the Appropriations Committee to press our priorities. And every year since I've been in the Senate, I've pressed the priorities for exactly what you're talking about, which is full funding for a science-based approach to manage our fisheries. And now that I'm the chair of the committee that oversees that, I'm going to work, I've already done it, I wrote a letter with Senator Hirono, who's a Democrat from Hawaii, fully funding NOAA. I'm 110% in an issue you just talked about, fully funding all of the science. The best way that we continue to have sustainable fisheries and healthy coastal communities like this wonderful island right here is to have a science-based approach to our fisheries, and I am 120% committed to that.
Senator, the next question is from Mike Milligan.
Thank you for coming, Senator. Shows your story that you showed up, and I appreciate that. My question is also about health care. And I feel if you're against government health care, you're against Don Young, because Don Young would be dead if he didn't have government health care, but he would have died in the 90s from his health care issues. I have stepchildren and biological children. I have six total. At one time, we had five in the home. And healthcare was just an unbelievably dominant issue in our house. And I have two questions. The first question is, we know how politicians get their healthcare. They get healthcare from the government. But how did you get healthcare before you were a politician for your children? And the second question is, we have a health system in this country based on money. Other people have a health care system based on health. And you have been a consistent supporter of Citizens United decision, which keeps money in politics. How can you address this money associated with health care delivery when you're such an ardent supporter of Citizens United? Thank you, Senator.
So I'm like a lot of you. I'm on an Obamacare exchange, right? So in the Congress, I think, and I'm still trying to figure this out, we had the opportunity for the Congress to opt out or have staff opt out. I don't think that was, I certainly wasn't supportive of the bill. I wasn't even in Congress when all that passed. But I'm in the exchange like you guys are. I'm in the small business exchange. That is actually based in D.C. because that's where my office is. But shame. So I'm not, and I didn't opt out or anything. Then I said I opt out. So it's, I'm under the same law that everybody else is. Before that, I was a combo of private sector. When I was in the private sector, state of Alaska, and Marine Corps. So that's kind of, you know, at least mine. You know, what I've been trying to do, and look, I know that, and I'm just being honest here, I know that some people think that the Affordable Care Act has been very helpful in terms of enabling people to have access. And I'm not arguing with that, but I also think that there's a lot of people who are considered to have access and coverage when in Alaska the numbers have just, I mean, I'll just give you an example. I was at dinner with my wife and my youngest daughter. They also live in Anchorage. They didn't move out to D.C. with me, so I try to get home pretty much every weekend. And I had someone come up to us at dinner and describe her situation. It was very... Just her and her husband, premium started 5 years ago, $500, $600. She's now paying $3,000 a month. $3,000 with a $10,000 deductible. So that's not, to me, that person is considered, quote, covered under the Affordable Care Act, but
not affordable.
Come on, that's $33,000 before you get any coverage. That's completely unaffordable. So it's complex, it's very personal. As you mentioned, Mike, I get it, and that's why we have been trying to meet with everybody. Now, we have our own very unique challenges. When you're what would constitute the 17th largest country in the world, if we were a country, and you have, gosh, I don't know, 6 or 7 hospitals total, the structural costs of healthcare in Alaska are going to be very different and higher than they are anywhere else. And what I've been trying to focus on as we're working through the reform process is how do we look at things that will help my state and all of you on those structural costs. I'm not really focused on the rest of the country. It's you guys. And it's not going to be easy. There's going to be some tough decisions. But I think the status quo of doing nothing when we're down to one provider in the individual market and premiums are going through the state of Alaska, the legislature not spent $55 million last legislative session to essentially fund a reinsurance program. Our premiums would have gone up 40% again last year. So I'm not saying there's easy answers, but I'm also saying that I don't believe the status quo is sustainable when you have families that, and small businesses that are literally going bankrupt under the current system.
Senator, the next question is from Drew again.
Hi, I'm one of those sad stories about health care. My husband is self-employed. Our premiums were $1,900 a month. This is last year, so if you round it up to $2,000 a month, that's $24,000. $6,000 deductible for in network. $13,000 deductible out of network. He had one medical emergency. It cost us $48,000 last year. The system is broken. We are the largest and strongest nation, or the most powerful nation and richest nation in the world, and we can't afford to cover our citizens. It's become a moral issue for me because when we bring in $300 million here for our military defense, but we can't offer affordable health care for people, something is wrong. I just think our priorities are wrong, and with all due respect, if the people that were deciding these things had to pay their own premiums, I think maybe things would be done a lot faster. I know the system is broken. There are a lot of good things. My two daughters, who are mid-20s, had better health care than I do in Oregon. They were on the, they got it through the network. They were paying $270 a month with a $1,500 deductible. So something is very, very wrong. And when it was state by state, Alaska doesn't have the number of people to support it. Therefore, when you have a monopoly, it doesn't work. But I just think health care is a huge issue, and I don't understand why we can't figure it out when there are nations everywhere else. No one goes through this.
Yeah. We spend more as a country as a percentage of our GDP than the other countries that you're talking about that seem to have a better functioning system. So we actually—it's not like we're kind of doing it on cheap. We're actually spending a lot more to put into it. So one of the things that I think is actually going to be really important, and it's not what we're looking at in the current legislation, because this is something that I'm very hopeful that we'll get bipartisan support on, which is, in addition to trying to structure the system in a way that makes it less dysfunctional, as you're describing, is that we have to look at ways to start squeezing out some of these incredible high costs. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. You know, someone asked me earlier about the big pharma, mm-hmm. right? And I think we need to look at ways to bring down some of these enormously high cost of drugs. So that's a hugely important area we have to do that. There's a lot of different ways to look at that. You've seen some of these companies that got their generic patents, and then boom, they send a spike 300% with regard to what they're charging people. I mean, I think that should be illegal. Right? There's a number of ways that we should look at that. You raised a really good point. One of the senators I've been in a lot of discussions with is Senator Rand Paul, who is a doctor, very smart guy, and he's got this idea that let the buyers kind of get together across state lines. So let's say you want to go to a credit union in Alaska. If you could join with every other member of a credit union in America, right, that's going to be millions of people. All of a sudden, that's purchasing power. That's leverage against the negotiations with either drug companies or insurance companies. So I actually think we need more competition and more leverage to bring down the cost, which is why I'm opposed to the single payer system, because that's the opposite direction. Let me give you one other area that the Affordable Care Act didn't even touch, and that is the tort and medical malpractice reform. So right now, doctors practice defensive medicine. So you come in, you might have a headache, and they'll order a battery of tests, maybe even an MRI. Not because they think you need an MRI, but because if there's a lawsuit, they want to make sure that they have checked every box that they can defend themselves. Well, I think that kind of, defensive practice, there's studies that show that drives the cost of healthcare in America up by the billions and billions. So to me, there are a whole host of areas that we can start to work on to drive these costs down, which will help with some of the dysfunctional elements of the system that you're talking about. And again, if you guys have ideas on this, please, please let me and my team.